First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Florida is setting up a showdown when it comes to federal vaccine mandates. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this hour, what you need to know when it comes to getting vaccinated at your workplace. What is happening here? We're going to get a closer look in just a moment. The number to call in now, 549-2937. Then later, billions in federal dollars are flowing to Florida to improve our infrastructure. Some of that money will go to give us better Amtrak service. We'll ride the rails with Bill Delaney of the Jackson a little later in the show. That's all ahead, but first this hour, a ban on vaccine mandates at Florida companies is racing through Tallahassee this week. The governor called lawmakers into a special session for the week, and the goal they have is to prevent COVID vaccination requirements in private Florida workplaces, including healthcare facilities. Now, the state plan clashes with a federal rule that calls for millions of workers to be fully vaccinated by January 4th. The Republican-controlled Florida House is also expected to pass a bill today that's raising some eyebrows. It could be a first step toward the state moving away from oversight by OSHA. That's the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Lawmakers say they want to establish their own workplace safety agency for the state, although that could be a very steep uphill climb. What does all of this mean for the health of Floridians? Well, Dr. Jeff Goldhagen is a professor and chief of the Division of Community and Societal Pediatrics at UF College of Medicine, JAX, but he's also the former director of the Duval County Health Department. Dr. Goldhagen, always good to have your insights. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure being with you.
And as we talk about the legislative session happening this week in Tallahassee that would weaken federal vaccine requirements at your job, we want to hear from you folks. Are you working for a large company? Have they been talking to you about getting vaccinated? Companies with 100 employees or more have this requirement. By January 4th, you need to be vaccinated or perhaps undergo stringent testing. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Let us know how you feel about this. Now, a local representative, Clay Yarborough, Dr. Goldhagen, recently co-signed onto a similar bill which would outlaw mandatory vaccines during a public health emergency. This bill was originally proposed by his colleague, Representative Alex Andrade. This gives you an idea of where Republicans are in Tallahassee. Take a listen to this. Okay, we don't have that. We'll have that in a moment. But Dr. Goldhagen, let's begin with you. What are your thoughts about the session?
Well, this is clearly a political manipulation of the system, of our public health system. This is all occurring in the context of a pandemic that's killed 60,000 people here in Florida, has infected well over 3.5 million people. So this is not about an issue of low significance. This is an issue that has profoundly impacted our community. It's impacted nearly every family. It's created COVID orphans around the state. And so this is a fundamental, critical public health emergency for which we have a mitigating approach to that, which is vaccinating people. We have a long history in this country of public health mandates that respond to critical emergency situations. There is, in our lifetime, no other situation that we've faced that has been so profoundly impacted our community and our families. And it's critically important that we implement these mandates. I should also say that this is not without precedent with respect to the legislature impacting issues from a political perspective. Several years ago, as an example, the legislature banned pediatricians from talking about gun safety with their patients. Now that was overturned in the court. We also have to recognize that Florida is one of the few state, including Republican-run states, that does not have a Medicaid expansion initiative, so that it has prevented many people, around millions of Floridians, from getting access to care. So this is an example of the involvement of our politicians in defining public health, defining medical outcomes, which is a precedent that will lead us down a path that, in fact, I think ultimately, if this persists, will end up banning all the vaccine mandates, including childhood vaccine mandates that protect us and our children in particular.
Okay, so if these measures pass in Florida, a private employer would have to offer several opt-outs for workers who don't want to be vaccinated, medical or religious exemptions, or other types of opt-outs like regular testing or mask wearing. As a physician, what's your reaction to that? Does that allow for safety in the workplace while also preserving some choice on the part of workers?
No, it doesn't. Any individual who's not vaccinated, and in particular any individual who is not vaccinated and not masked, is a risk factor for those working around them. And also, we know that children from 6 months, from birth up to age five, are not eligible for the vaccine at this point. It also places them at significant risk, because we know that a number of people actually are asymptomatic carriers of the disease. So one person in an environment in particular who's not masked is a risk for all individuals in that indoor environment.
What about even fining companies that violate whatever the state passes? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that's a political issue that I think is, if it works to ensure that vaccine mandates are maintained in the business, then yes, for sure, I would support it. What's even more ludicrous and is the fact that this mandate or the elimination of the mandate for healthcare facilities is included in this bill. The healthcare facilities, whether it's a hospital or nursing homes, we go to those with the knowledge that, in fact, we will be safe, and that our safety and our health is of utmost importance and a priority. Eliminating that puts all of us at risk who work in those systems, who go to those systems, who trust those systems. There's no rational reason at all to eliminate the vaccine mandates. But in particular, in healthcare facilities, it puts all of us at increasing risk, because we know there are many people in those facilities who are at high risk for immunological issues, age issues, and so on. And so that makes no sense.
If you're just tuning in, this is First Coast Connect. We're talking about Florida's special session happening this week, looking to weaken vaccine mandates in the workplace. Give us a call at 549-2937. We'll go to your many emails and tweets in a few minutes. Now, local Republican Representative Clay Yarborough got in on this, Dr. Goldhagen. He recently co-signed onto a bill which would outlaw mandatory vaccines during a public health emergency. This was originally proposed by Representative Alex Andrade. Take a listen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 7B repeals from statute the authority of the Department of Health to unilaterally and without prior legislative approval subject Floridians to forced vaccination during a declared state of emergency.
Not only that, Dr. Goldhagen, lawmakers are actually talking about leaving OSHA, trying to nullify any oversight from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. That is the federal agency that oversees safety in American workplaces. They want to try to create their own statewide agency to regulate workplace health and safety. That they would have to get permission from the federal government to leave OSHA, so this might be more performative than anything else. But what about this?
Well, it's a continuation of the assault of our politicians on the health and well-being of our community for, I would say, pernicious political reasons, it has persisted over a period of time. Our public health system in the state of Florida has been dismantled. It began under the Scott administration. It has been accelerated under the DeSantis administration, and all expectations that we have in Florida as citizens that our best interests are being protected because we have a viable and evidence-based public health system is now a dream. It doesn't exist, and actually I would say it's a nightmare. And from a public health perspective, we have dismantled our public health system, and no one in this state should feel safe because their health is being maintained through rigorous and evidence-based public health practices.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment. 549-2937. You know, this already flared up in town just the other day, Dr. Goldhagen, at the PGA Tour. A reporter and a producer and a host there, Taryn Gregson, she posted on social media Monday that she was fired for refusing to follow COVID protocols at her workplace. Gregson is pregnant. She had worked for the PGA Tour for over 5 years. She wanted to get a religious exemption before returning to the office. The PGA Tour said no, that she was not following their protocols for masking or testing. The PGA Tour apparently says you either have to get the vaccinations or else wear a mask and get tested regularly. She didn't want to do that. That gives you an example of the kinds of conflicts that we're seeing now and that could ramp up depending on what the legislature passes.
Well, so the opportunity to be tested on a routine basis, if in fact you refuse to follow the mandate for the vaccination, provides the option for people to continue to work and to continue to ensure the safety of their coworkers. Using a mask, wearing a mask, also is not an intrusive requirement. It's a simple requirement that millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of us in the country have now become used to over the last 2 years. So the fact that there is a opportunity for people not to get vaccinated, but to continue to protect those around them, and I would also say, in that situation, with women who are pregnant and women who will soon have babies, protect their children is a reasonable and viable alternative for our community.
Okay, let's go to your calls. We're talking about the legislative session happening in Tallahassee right now. Lawmakers are working to weaken vaccine requirements in the workplace. This will clash up against a federal rule that requires most large companies to have their workforce vaccinated by January of next year. What's it like at your job? 549-2937. Linda is in Mandarin. Linda, good morning.
Good morning. Fortunately for me, I work from home, but I've been sheltering in place. I just started going out in October. But I'd just like to plead for my Republican brothers and sisters who are very pro DeSantis and Congress people to please reach out to their legislators. Do we trust a state to form their own OSHA that never got the unemployment system right? People who still didn't get paid for benefits they were owed. Today, from the pandemic that started last March, so do I trust they could put in a system? Or are we going back to the good old days where big business can have their way? You know, you can get, you know, some kind of cut, lose a limb. It is ridiculous. Unfortunately, though, the governor is very popular. So there's obviously a lot of people in our state that don't mind us becoming the disease platform of the nation. It's just, I don't have words. Each week there's some new drama But I would just like ask them to please, they have their rights, but their rights should end when their rights that they would perform could kill another person. That young lady that didn't want to take a vaccine, they said, well, wear a mask. She doesn't want to wear a mask. You can't have it all, people. We've lost the art of compromise. If you want something that's important to you, you might have to give up a little bit of something else.
All right, Linda. Thank you. Here's an email from Rob. I wonder if Floridians realize how much a separate OSHA system would cost taxpayers, and it would be woefully inadequate. He says, for the first time ever, my family is considering leaving this state due to political reasons. We don't want to work here and contribute to a place where there is no rational protection for the health of us or our kids. We are neither Democrat nor Republican, but we can no longer stand the state's politics. Now, Dr. Goldhagen, there is sharp disagreement among Americans over how far government and business should be allowed to go in the name of public health. That said, the Chamber of Commerce part of this conversation, they want to have the latitude to set workplace safety rules for their workers. And so the governor's push on this is not necessarily in tune with the business wing of the Republican Party. So that's going to be interesting to watch.
Well, for sure. And there is a history that we cannot ignore. There's a history of the conflict between business and industry and workers' health and safety, which is why OSHA and the history of OSHA is so fundamentally important. And if we weaken those protections, then there is a trajectory that will continue to result and negatively impacting the health and well-being of not only all of us in the state, but in particular, workers. And you know, in this state, also this gets into political issues for sure. And you know, my background and experiences in pediatrics and public health, but this is also a state in which unions are not overly strong. And so this is all about politics, and it's all about worker safety, and it's all about unionizing and on. The common denominator here, though, is the public's health and the role and responsibility of government to first and foremost protect the community's health. In this situation, we can do it. We can do it by mandating vaccines. We can do it by providing other options for those who, for whatever reason, are against vaccinating against COVID through routine testing and mask wearing. And I would also continue to emphasize the fact that those folks who refuse to get vaccinated are putting their children at significant risk. We know that there have been millions of children that have been infected. We know there's been a significant number of children that have died. We do not know the long-term impact of COVID on children into adulthood. Those folks that are refusing to get vaccinated are putting their children at significant risk. These are people, all of us, who would do anything in the best interest of our children. Well, if you would do anything in the best interest of your children, get vaccinated.
Thomas in Mandarin. Hi, Thomas. You're on the air. Go ahead, Thomas.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to share an experience that we had last weekend, Saturday. My wife and I returned from a cruise to celebrate a belated 20th anniversary and also her 60th birthday and my best friend's 60th birthday. This involved 8 friends, 2 of which were 20-somethings, one of their sons and a friend, and the rest of us were all 59 and 60. As of yesterday, 3 of 8 of us are very sick with COVID right now.
Oh, including you?
No, I don't know why. I've got the cockroach DNA so far.
Good.
I'm my wife's caregiver right now. The thing is that the cruise line was extremely diligent. They would not let you on the ship unless you could prove that you were negatively tested within 24 hours and that you had your vaccinations. If there was any doubt with your COVID card like I had, which was an original and a little beat up from my wallet, they held you up. The cruise staff, from the captain to the cook, wore masks 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
The passengers were flippant with the masks. Some did, some didn't. It's ironic that we all got sick immediately upon return. The only thing we could figure is maybe in one stop in Bimini that it happened on the islands. We'll never know, but people need to take this seriously.
How sick are your friends?
My wife is starting to recover right now. I've never seen her so sick before. She was completely bedbound. I was making sure she had electrolytes and smoothies just to keep her hydrated. She's starting to walk around a little now. Being that we are vaccinated, I think that's why we're making quicker recoveries. You know, God help the people on the island that don't have the luxury that we do and take for granted by having vaccinations. This is real. I'm seeing it now.
Yeah. Thomas, thank you so much. And I'm so sorry your wife and your buddies are sick. And so Dr. Goldhagen, he's a braver man, a braver person than me. I wouldn't get on a cruise ship right now, even with all of those protocols. But that gives you an idea of how quickly the disease is still spreading, even with all of these safety precautions.
Well, what we know, Melissa, today is that there is COVID surging in multiple places around the country, surging in hospitalizations. There are places around the country that are experiencing what we experienced before, which is ICU beds that are filled. This disease is still surging in this country, and it's surging among those who are unvaccinated. Certainly, there is breakthrough disease, for sure, which results in generally in mild and very rare hospitalization. We are still in the middle of a fifth wave of COVID, and it will impact Florida sooner than later, and we're seeing it. This disease is still a very serious issue. It's killing people around the country, and for Floridian legislators to be playing with these public health opportunities to prevent the disease in our state is just wrong. I would say it's a bit demonic.
Ann emails the show, this shouldn't be called a mandate. That's a bad label, just like defund the police. No one is being mandated to work at a place where vaccines are required. It's a choice, she says. Lots of tweets. Here is one from one listener. He says, I fully protest this entire costly special session. Floridians are being manipulated and don't even realize it. Let's go to Matt, who's downtown. Matt, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I was wondering, if they're going to mandate vaccines for COVID, why not mandate them for the flu? Why not follow through with all the requirements for the businesses to improve their HVAC system? What happened to all those things from the beginning?
All right, thanks, Matt. Dr. G.
Well, first of all, flu vaccine is mandated. It's mandated in healthcare facilities, and there are no opt-outs. Essentially. So we do need in healthcare facilities and nursing homes as well.
And let me just jump in. The legislators right now want to make it so that even healthcare facilities in Florida can't mandate that people get the COVID vaccine, which is
right.
A different kettle of fish than, say, you know, you go to work over at CSX, which has a big workforce, and a private company that wants to require vaccines. It's different when you go into a hospital. That to me is worthy of a further discussion because most doctors are vaccinated. Not all nurses are. This would mandate all of them be vaccinated. And here's one more email from David. After almost two decades in Florida, with my spouse and I serving the community as a public school teacher and a primary care physician, we are leaving. We have tried to advocate to friends, the community, and to elected officials to protect our health. And we just can't stay and continue to raise our kids here. Our number one priority is their health, he says. All right, Dr. Goldhagen, your final thoughts.
Well, this is a precedent that we don't want to set, or we don't want to establish. Again, this is about public health. It's about the dismantling of our public health system. It's about politicians making decisions what is in our best interest from a medical and a public health perspective. It is not going to stop here. We will end up with eliminating all vaccine mandates, including for children, if we let this continue. If we eliminate federal OSHA and put our own OSHA system in place, it will result in dismantling many gains that we have accomplished over the last 100 years that have been put in place to ensure safety in our workplace. The majority of Floridians actually support the requirement for vaccination against COVID, and we need to hear their voice because these are political decisions, not decisions being made from the perspective of public health.
Dr. Jeff Goldhagen, always great to have you on the show. Thanks.
No, thank you, Melissa.
And much more still ahead. Later, a little good news to brighten up your midweek in our What's Good Wednesdays. But up next.
There's currently only two trains that serve in Jacksonville right now. This would bring it up to four, which doubles the amount of trains.
What billions in new infrastructure dollars mean for riding the rails here in Florida as Amtrak is set to expand. That's next. Welcome back. Well, on Monday, President Joe Biden signed into law his $1.2 trillion infrastructure plan. It includes billions for passenger and freight rail. And that means better Amtrak service here in Jacksonville. For more on what we can expect riding the rails, I checked in with Bill Delaney over at our partner, the Jackson Mag. Hey, Bill. Good to talk to you about Amtrak. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, as you write in the Jackson Mag, Amtrak could be looking to expand its rail operations here in Jacksonville and across Florida. This is part of President Biden's $2 trillion infrastructure and jobs plan, part of Build Back Better, as it's called. What can we expect from Amtrak here in Florida?
So basically what it's doing is it is going to double the amount of Amtrak trains that come through Jacksonville. It'll be, right now, Jacksonville connects to Orlando over the CSX lines, which go from Jacksonville to the west side, down to Orlando, and then onward to Tampa, and then it cuts back east to go to Miami. There's currently only two trains that serve in Jacksonville right now. This would bring it up to four, which doubles the amount of trains.
So you could get on a train in Jacksonville, take it down to Orlando, take it to Tampa, and eventually there'll be another line that will take you down to Miami?
Yeah, that's right. You'll be able to get to Miami. You'll have twice as many opportunities to get to Miami via train.
So this is a big deal for people who have been advocating for more public transportation options in Florida for a long time. Talk about what this means for Jacksonville overall.
Well, it's a sign that that Amtrak and those planning President Biden's infrastructure bill are seeing the enormous growth in Jacksonville and other parts of Florida. And what this really was is an opportunity. It's one of the first times that we've committed serious money to expanding Amtrak. You know, in fact, Jacksonville has actually lost passenger trains. And this would expand it. But it's a sign that they were looking and they saw areas where, you know, there was more growth, so more demand for additional transit opportunities. And this is one of the areas that they picked.
And Florida's growing so fast, that's why we're getting this largesse, I guess?
Yeah, exactly, and especially all four of Florida's major cities are connected by this route, so it's a great opportunity, and it's not only to connect between the cities themselves, but it'll also increase the number of trains that you can take even to, like, local stations.
Well, do you think it will improve, beyond the new routes, will it improve Amtrak overall? Because when you look at public opinion around rail, people want the option to travel by train, but they want the train station to be convenient, and they want the times you can get on the train to be convenient to their schedule. Those aren't always options for Amtrak, and we don't even have a downtown Amtrak station.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, speaking of the times, you know, adding more trains means there's more times to choose from. When you think about, like, trying to fly on a plane to somewhere, like, you get, like, a list of the flights in that day and make your decision accordingly. With Amtrak around here, you didn't have very many options. And this will increase the options. As far as the downtown station, that is something, it's been on the long-term plans for Jacksonville for 30 years.
Yeah.
To bring the train station back downtown.
With all the other public transit, yeah. But
right. Look, yeah, that won't be part of this project. That's going to have to be spearheaded by JTA if we are to get it. Right now, our Amtrak station is up in northwest Jacksonville in the middle of a rail yard surrounded by industrial uses. There's not a lot of opportunity for it to spark growth. If we were to move it downtown, not only would it be able to spark growth, but it would immediately be connected to all our other transit options, our buses, the Skyway, bus rapid transit.
You know, and when we talk about the expansion of Amtrak and the infrastructure bill overall, you know, a minority of Americans even hold passports, Bill, but when they travel overseas, they realize how far behind we are as compared to the rest of the world. When you ride a bullet train overseas in another country and you see how incredible they are and how fast and clean they are, they're practically silent compared to Amtrak. They have better service. We're behind.
We are. We've fallen very far behind when it comes to train service. And it's not only, you know, Europe is, you know, everybody that goes to Europe and rides the train talks about how great it is. It isn't only Europe. Japan and China have done the same things. There's really no reason it couldn't work here. It just hasn't been done. There's a lot of opportunity, and it appears that demand is increasing for train travel, too, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just over the summer, I had the opportunity to ride Amtrak from Chicago down to my grandparents' farm in rural Illinois, and for the first time, we were able to take the kids on an Amtrak train so they could experience that. It's just a great way to see the country. It's a great way to travel. You know, it's interesting, as I look at your article at the Jackson Mag and the graphic of the Amtrak 2035 vision plan, unfortunately, they are not putting back the service between Jacksonville and New Orleans, which I think would be a really popular train trip for people.
Yeah, that one was left out, not necessarily because it wouldn't be successful, but because the amount of money that it would take to repair all of those lines out there, including some that were, you know, destroyed 16 years ago and the flooding from Hurricane Katrina, compared to the ease of doing it on tracks that are already existing, don't need a ton of repair between Jacksonville and Tampa, that it was just kind of a, you know, you get more bang for your buck doing that.
Interesting. And there's so much more in your piece. It's great to have you guys as news partners. Check out the latest on Amtrak expansion in Florida at the Jackson Mag. Bill Delaney, always good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
Well, Jacksonville University has announced a new partnership with Jaxport focused on the health of the St. John's River. And they've got new survey results showing people in this city value a healthy waterway. Here with more, two JU guests, Dr. Ray Oldakowski, Professor of Geography, Principal Investigator for their Public Policy Institute polling. Hi, Dr. Oldakowski.
Hi, Melissa.
And also on the line, Dr. Melinda Simmons. She's an Assistant Professor of Marine Science at JU and leading engagement with this new initiative called Connected. Hey, Dr. Simmons. Oh, let me press the right button. Hey, Dr. Simmons, good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much for having us on.
Thanks for being with us. Okay, so tell us more. Let's begin with you, Dr. Simmons. Let's talk about this partnership with Jaxport. Why is the university joining up with Jaxport to raise awareness about the importance of the St. John's River?
The river needs our help. There are many things that have improved with the state of the river over the last few decades, but there are certainly some that are declining. Many of us are familiar with the algal blooms that are happening annually. And so we did this survey, which I think Ray is going to fill us in a bit more on the details, and found that there was really a need and a want from the community to learn more about the river and what we can do to help it from the business level, government level, and individuals.
Let me ask you as a follow-up, Dr. Simmons, critics of this partnership don't necessarily see Jaxport as the best partner for you to engage in this effort. Jaxport has come under fire for polluting the river over the years and particularly endangering its health with its plans to dredge down to a depth of 47 feet to accommodate bigger ships. So what about that criticism?
That's a fair criticism. The Army Corps performed their analyses and Jaxport followed their guidelines. At this time, we feel it's important to focus on what we can do to improve going forward.
And so let's talk about that, Dr. Oldakowski. You do find that there's strong local support for the health of the river. Tell us more about your data.
Sure. We asked people, it was a random sample of Jacksonville residents, and asked them about the river as an asset. That's a question that we've asked in the past. And up to 80% now rate the river as a very valuable asset for Jacksonville. That's up about 10% from a 2018 survey and about 30% from a 2012 survey. And I think what we're seeing is that access is the key. Probably about 10 years ago, we had local officials realizing that the river was a key component of Jacksonville's character and its assets, but a lot of people just thought of it as something that they drove over a bridge and didn't really get to enjoy the river. And now we're seeing increased use for boating, fishing, swimming, walking along the river, that sort of thing. And I think that has increased people's value of the river as an asset for the city.
So people also believe, according to what you found, that we're all responsible, government, business, and individuals, in protecting the river's health. Is that right?
Exactly. And surprisingly, when we ask people where the attention for city funding should go, you know, we got the usual things that people have mentioned in the past. They want to see more walkways, expand the river walks, have more restaurants. But 87% said that it was very important to take care of the health of the river, and about 80% said that should be the first priority for the city in terms of funding, is ensuring the cleanliness of the St. John's River.
Well, let me ask you a little bit more about that, and both of you jump in. As Dr. Simmons said, the port is dredging based on a study from the Army Corps of Engineers. Other studies were done, particularly one at UNF, I believe, that found that the dredging project overestimated the number of jobs that would be brought to the port and underestimated the environmental damage. So as you guys talk about this initiative, what about this? I mean, Jaxport is typically in the business of making money and moving goods through the port. It is an economic driver. It's not necessarily good for the environmental health of the river. So how is Jaxport going to, I guess, clean up its act in that sense, since some of the responsibility is on the port to do a better job of protecting river health?
I think that we can all do more to help the river. I don't think it's helpful to think of economic boom being counter to environmental sensibilities. So again, what is done is done. And I think we need to focus on what we can do to improve. And so by getting out in the community and having conversations about this, going to public schools, going to civic organizations, focusing on how we can increase the flow from the headwaters and do things better going forward, I think is the goal.
Dr. Oldakowski.
Yeah, and one of the first questions that Jaxport asked us to put on the survey was to find out from people whether, you know, protecting the environment should be a priority for the St. John's River. And people said that protecting the environment and helping the economy can be given equal priority and be able to create jobs and keep the river clean.
Mm. And talk a little bit more about the Marine Science Center at JU, Dr. Simmons, because it is an important research institute.
So our Marine Science Research Institute offers undergraduate and graduate education, but we also have groups come in for lessons and activities from off the JU campus. And we're hoping that more of that will happen now that the Connected has been kicked off. People can actually go to our Connected webpage, ju.edu/connected, and request, there's a button that says invite us to teach, and there are various options. So we can either bring groups out here and to give them science lessons on the river or in our facilities, or we can bring our Enviroscapes to them. We would love to get them out on the boat. It just depends on the size of the group. We also have educational videos and free lesson plans and educational activities available on our website. And we do. We have a lot of expertise here in the Marine Science Research Institute. But also beyond the MSRI, we have people in our education department, our fine arts department, and of course, Ray from geography. And so this is really, we're getting a lot of expertise from across the campus involved in this program.
Okay, let's take one quick call. Justin is calling from downtown. Go ahead, Justin.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was just curious if you or your guest could speak to the actual safety of swimming in the river. We boat in there quite often, but we've always been a little hesitant to actually get in the water. So any information about health reports on the river and being in the water?
Yeah. Dr. Oldakowski, people are hesitant to do stuff like that. The water's just not clean enough.
Right, and I'll let Melinda speak to the actual quality of the water for people for swimming, but as I mentioned, the percentage of people that have been boating, swimming, and fishing has increased over the last 10 years, so the confidence in being able to use the river must be increasing.
Okay. Dr. Simmons, how can people get in touch with this new Connected initiative?
Okay, so just to answer that last question really quickly, not all of the river is created equal. So there are certainly plenty of the tributaries that I would feel comfortable swimming in and others that are not, and there are resources online to look that up. So if you would like to get in contact with our program or invite us out to speak at your civic organization, you can email us at connected@ju.edu, or again, check out our website at ju.edu/connected.
Connected. Thank you so much, Dr. Ray Oldakowski, Dr. Melinda Simmons, both at Jacksonville University. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
And in a moment, some news and notes for your week and a little good news in our What's Good Wednesdays. Keep listening. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
UF Health North, whether you're having your first baby or your third, UF Health physicians, nurses, and midwives want to help make your birth experience special. From the moment you arrive to the moment you leave, learn more at north.ufhealthjax.org.
ServPro Jacksonville South and Arlington Jacksonville East reminds you, water damage happens fast. Be prepared for this year's storm season with emergency plans and service numbers on hand. 721-2230. ServPro Jacksonville South and Arlington Jacksonville East, like it never even happened.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community, featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at VickersLanding.com.
The Jacksonville Music Experience brings you the beautiful noise emerging from Northeast Florida. Profiles, music reviews, playlists, concert recommendations, and more. JME turns your ear on the local scene. Visit jacksmusic.org to dig in.
U.S. companies are still trying a range of work-from-home and hybrid work arrangements. In Portugal, the government is passing new laws to protect remote workers from being always on.
Remote work can be a huge opportunity in terms of changing the way we cope with work and life and family.
How Portugal and other countries are making work-from-home better and more sustainable, it's on the world.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Cal Rittenhouse claims he killed two people because he thought they were dangerous. The McMichaels claim they killed Ahmaud Arbery because they thought he was dangerous. When it comes to self-defense, how does the law work? And does the law work? We'll unpack those questions and hear from you next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, they work to improve access to specialty care for low-income and uninsured patients. And now We Care Jax is honoring local health care heroes by holding their first Caring Awards since before the pandemic began. Now, these are amazing medical professionals. In spite of COVID, they gave of their time and talents to help low-income or uninsured people facing serious health challenges. Specialty physicians and other pros who gave of themselves in a tough time, and they're being honored now. Angela Strain is executive director of We Care Jax.
Melissa, this last period through the pandemic has been an incredible challenge for our community, for our neighbors who are uninsured, and even for the providers who have hung in there and have provided care. Now, typically, we try to gather at least once a year to say thank you to our volunteer providers, but last year it wasn't possible because of the pandemic. This year, we are so grateful that we are going to be able to gather in a smaller group in an outdoor setting because we really have some incredible providers that we need to say thank you to. We need to make sure that our community continues to show appreciation to all of those in the healthcare field who are doing incredible work during this really challenging time. So WeCare was founded back in 1993, and it really is dedicated to working on behalf of our uninsured neighbors who are living at 200% or below poverty. Our volunteer founders, they were doing some volunteer primary care, which was a great addition for the city with so many uninsured adults living here. But they realized that when they needed diagnostic radiology or they needed a pulmonary consult or they needed to take care of a patient with cancer, they didn't have any specialists to send them to. So truly, it began with the Duval County Medical Society and one of our founders, Dr. George Trotter, going out there and asking his peers and colleagues to donate their services.
Congrats to We Care Jax. And here's some more good news for your Wednesday. It's locally brewed beer for a cause. Yes, the fifth annual Knights of Pints kicks off Friday and runs through the end of January. It's happening at four St. Augustine breweries: Old Coast Ales, Bog Brewing Company, Dog Rose Brewing Company, and Ancient City Brewing. Now, Knights of Pints, of course, coincides with the City of St. Augustine's Knights of Light. It all started a few years ago by the breweries as a way to give back to nonprofits in the area while enjoying the festive period. So have fun on your pub crawl, St. Augie. Here's another fun one. The Museum of Science and History, in partnership with the Florida Theater, presents an evening with Neil deGrasse Tyson. This is tomorrow night at the Mosh. Now, the renowned astrophysicist, author, and TV host will entertain audiences with the science popular movies and television shows got wrong and what they got right. Tickets still available for this exciting event. Here's something cool, a new offshore scuba diving and fishing destination, approximately 28 miles off the Atlantic coast of the Mayport area of Jacksonville, has been created by intentionally sinking two large ships to create artificial reefs. Now, this unique vessel recycling effort provides an extended alternate life for the ships, benefits the ocean environment, and it creates an attraction for boaters and divers. The project was led by Joe Kistel, underwater cinematographer at Kistel Media, and he told me all about it.
Well, this particular project started about a couple years ago, and there's a local contractor, Mobo Marine. They had this one tugboat that they essentially couldn't use for what they originally intended. And they know what we do and some of the conservation work we do. And so they actually reached out to us and they said, hey, if you guys think this would work, we would like to help, you know, maybe make this an artificial reef. So we jumped on board and said, yeah, this would be great. We'll have to do some work to get it ready and cleaned and all that kind of stuff. But we basically jumped on board at that point, and Mobro did all the heavy lifting. And it took 2 years, and some of it was because of COVID stuff. Some other things popped up, some regulatory stuff popped up, and just a lot of different things that had to be done to make it happen. And then interestingly enough, not long ago, several months ago this year, while we were working on this tugboat vessel, another vessel was acquired by Mobro, and we were able to now make this one reef project into a two-ship reef project. And that was really exciting. It added a little bit more work to the project, but it ended up really adding to it. So instead of just sinking the one tugboat to make one reef, we were able to sink this tugboat and this, essentially a sailboat type vessel as well, and create two reefs out of one project, essentially.
What an amazing project. Anyone who's offshore from Mayport, you can check it out. A quick correction, something I said a minute ago. Neil deGrasse Tyson will appear at the Florida Theater tomorrow night, not the Mosh, although the event is in partnership with the Mosh. So again, tickets for Neil deGrasse Tyson at the Florida Theater tomorrow night. Okay, one more item. You are invited to participate in UNF Sculpture Program's Iron Pour event. Yes, there is such a thing as this. An Iron Pour event happening on campus this Saturday. UNF students are going to pour molten iron onto sand blocks to cast images in a stunning artistic demonstration. Now, this event is free to attend. Anyone with no prior experience can create their own iron piece by making a scratch block in sand and having it cast in iron. You can do that for a small fee. They're even going to have free parking for this in parking lots 9 and 10 at UNF. The fun kicks off Saturday at 4 o'clock at UNF's Sculpture Yard behind the UNF Annex. Have fun. And if you've got good news to add to our weekly Wednesday menu, drop us a line. And thanks for listening. This is First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross, and we'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great Wednesday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.